Thank you. Thank you. My name is Buzz Wyckoff, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'd like to welcome the new members here. And, you know, I just thought about this. I was at a training one time. It was a training for counselors, and they had a meeting that they just got together because it was at a college over in the eastern part of the state, and we were all staying there, and we had this makeshift meeting, and somebody must have 12-stepped this girl, and somehow it went around our sobriety date, and people had 12 and 15 and 20 years, and there was a new girl that was just sober that day, and she started crying, and she says, "I wish I was just like you folks." And I'll never forget this big black lady that was beside her reached over and grabbed her and just pulled her in close and hugged her. And she says, "Sweetie, you are just like us folks." And the thing is, we all have the same story. We all came in our first meeting and said, I remember the first time I came in and said, "I'm buzzing, I'm alcoholic." It was like swallowing a big dry horse turd, you know? It was like, oh. But the thing is, welcome, and keep coming back. Tonight I'm talking on Step 8, as they said. Says right here at the top, Step 8. Somebody, I think it was Joe, said, "What steps is?" I says, "How the hell do I know?" You know, it's us coming in, but it's Step 8. I have a disclaimer before each talk, and basically, I want to let you know I'm no expert on this, and it's not a how to do the steps. It's my personal experience of practicing these principles, these steps. That's all it is. As I prepared for this talk, I was on the computer typing, and I realized that I'm kind of unorthodox in my personal understanding of each step. And I apologize for that, but that's just kind of the way I am. And so please, take what you want, disregard the rest. The only thing I have of any value is my personal experience. If I do have an ego, so if I get to teaching and preaching, just disregard it, you know. But Step 8, we made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. That's Step 8. And this Christmas Eve, it'll be the 55th anniversary of the first time I got drunk. I was almost 13 years old. I was 12 years old. And it will be the 55th anniversary. My parents had a Christmas party every year, and they weren't alcoholics, but there was a lot of alcohol there. And I was almost 13. My brother-in-law that was older than me had me make him a drink, and then my cousin had me make him a drink. And nobody said anything to me as I was making these drinks, so I made another one. I took my prize to my bedroom. And when I took that first swallow, I thought I was poisoned. I thought I swallowed broken glass. Man, it burned all. It was Seagram 7 and Canada Dry grapefruit pop. But then it hit my stomach, and oh, man. It was like, this is the nectar of the gods. And I loved it. And I drank it, and I felt, you know, all that self-esteem, the low self-esteem, the anxiety, the depression melted away with that first drink. And then I thought, I'll bet another one I'd even feel better. And so I went back and I made myself just one more. And then I made another one that was just one more. And I lost count. I lost my memory. I passed out. And I made a fool out of myself in front of all my relatives, my parents. Next morning, I woke up. I had some vomit still in my sinuses, you know. And I thought I couldn't remember what happened. And I was ashamed. I went downstairs. Of course, the party was over. Mom and Dad were quietly drinking coffee at the kitchen table. And this is Christmas morning, you know. And I said, what happened? My mom, when she was, if she was really pissed, she called me my full Christian name. If she wasn't that bad, she called me a shite poke. I don't know what that is, but it ain't real good, you know? Yeah, especially when it's coming from your mom. She says, you embarrassed your father, you embarrassed me, and you embarrassed yourself. And the guilt. And I said, I don't feel real good. She gave me a Bromo seltzer. I don't know why. I thought she was trying to get me because it gave me the dry heaves. And, you know, when you have the dry heaves, yeah, Bill Cosby did a skit where you wouldn't be surprised if you puked out your shoes, you know, and I felt that way. And when I got done puking, I was on my knees from retching. And I got up, and there's a tear running down my cheek from retching. And I said right then, I'm the only one in the bathroom. I'll never do that again. And then I went out in the kitchen, and I said to my mom and dad, I said, I'm terribly sorry. I'll never do that again. And I meant it. Now, this is the first time I got drunk. The first time I blacked out, first time I lost control, and the first time I made amends. I'm awfully sorry, and I'll never do that again. You know, when I first started out drinking, I changed my mind. And I did it again. And when I first started drinking, I never once set out to do anything stupid when I was drinking, and I did not set out to hurt anyone. But because of the nature of the influence of John Barleycorn, or should I say, the nature of me when I'm under the influence of alcohol, I did stupid stuff and I hurt people. And I quite often apologized later on. That sometimes that while I was still drunk, a lot of times the next day or a few days later, I would go back to especially people close to me, you know, with my hat in my hand, and say, and I was very, I'm very sorry. And one of the things that happened, I'm telling you this because I think the people closest to me, and they were the people I hurt the most by my drinking, got desensitized, you know. Yeah, here he comes. Well, he's going to tell me he's sorry. He's going to do it again. I was not lying when I made these amends. I entered the professional community, and when working, I often had a wife or a husband, a son, a daughter, a parent would say, my alcoholic is such a good liar, he or she can look you right in the eye and swear they're never going to drink again, and by that night they're drunk. And the reason, alcoholics, we're not good liars. We think we are sometimes, but we ain't. But the thing is, when I looked people in the eye, and I said, I sincerely said I was sorry. I meant that. I meant that. And why I did it again is because I'm an addict. And alcohol is a chemical that I'm addicted to. I'm addicted to some other ones too, but alcohol. And, you know, I would mean it right then, even to myself. But I'd get to thinking about the good times. And I'd always think, I'm going to stop and just have one or two so I feel better, and I'm going to stop myself this time. And I've never ever done that. They aren't lying. I think I got that reputation for being a liar just because of that. And then later on in my drinking, I did do quite a bit of lying where I didn't mean it. I was lying. Step 8 became entire, or made amends to people. Made a list. I'm sorry. I'm nervous. I'll calm down in a minute probably. About the time I get done. I don't throw up as much in the bathroom before these as I did on step one, you know? Okay. Step eight, made a list of persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, I've thought about this a lot, especially in the last few days as I was writing this. I don't think I ever had a problem becoming willing to make amends to the people I harmed, unless they harmed me, and I'll probably address those people in a few minutes, but I was willing, and sometimes I jumped the gun. There's just one story. I wish Chaz was here, because I think he was here that night. I drank in the bar. This was a bar I drank in two or three nights a week, and there was another guy that drank in there quite often. And I can't say we were friends, but once in a while we would talk and stuff, and once in a while he would annoy me. And this was one of those nights he was annoying me, and I hauled off and I suckered him. I hit him with all my might right in the jaw and knocked him down on the floor. I knocked him out. And boy, as soon as he hit the floor, oh, this big rush of remorse came over. And I'm trying to pick him up and I'm apologizing. Well, this bartender, he was also the bar owner, so he would throw me out a couple times a week, you know. And that's what he did. He grabbed me and showed me the door, and boom, I was out. And he said, "Buzz, you can't apologize to somebody when he's still on the floor when you put him there, you know? It's a little too soon." And I cleaned that up a lot, but that's basically what he said. I paraphrased it. But the thing is, so here's the unorthodox part. I had to replace the word willing with the word ready. Became entirely ready. And I have to become entirely ready to make amends, and so do they. I haven't made amends to this gentleman, and this was 40 some years ago that this happened, and the reason I haven't made amends is he won't talk to me. I've tried. He lives in Cambridge Springs, and I see him, and a couple times I said, "You got a minute, can I talk to you?" And he won't talk to me. In fact, if I'm going down to one side of the street, he'll move to the other. And it bothers me that I did that and can't make amends, because I still feel guilty about it. Even if I did make amends, I'd probably still feel guilty. I have an ex-wife, and there was a lot of animosity in our breakup. And it was 13 years from the time we broke up until I made amends to her. Say, it took 13 years to become willing or ready. I had so much animosity towards her. It was a blessing. I didn't know where she was while I was still drinking. At times I fantasized about revenge, especially when I was drunk. And it was a good thing, because it was a good thing I couldn't find her. I think that was God doing for me what I could not do for myself, because I could have dug that hole deeper. I could have hurt her and hurt me. We have two children together. It would have hurt them. And so that was good. And this was a good thing. And it was good not to attempt to make amends, because, like I said, I wasn't ready. And neither was she. Frankly, I was not yet willing or ready to make amends to her. We separated in 1977, and I didn't divorce her until 1988, because I didn't know where she was for 10 years. And I think that was God doing for me what I could not do for myself. And the wound, the sore, the scab of that breakup began to heal. And I found out where she was, and we started communicating a little bit because of our our two daughters, and I had custody of them from the time we split up. And anyway, 13 years after we broke up, I went clear to Georgia to make amends. I'm kind of getting my ahead of myself. That's step nine stuff. I brought it up because many folks, a lot more than me, run steps eight and nine together. And I really want to, there's a real distinction between becoming ready to make amends and the actual amends. And I'll talk about the amends next week. But earlier, no, I didn't earlier. Marilyn, would you pass out the worksheets? Oh, shit. I was gonna say, here it says earlier I gave you a worksheet that I used both personally and professionally, but I didn't do that. But here it is. I stole this from a book that Joe McHugh wrote. The book's called The Steps We Took. I didn't write down what page it was. It is copyrighted. This isn't, so if you want to make copies of this, and go ahead. If Joe's going to sue anybody, it could be me, but Joe's dead. And I knew Joe. He wasn't the type to sue me anyway. He was one of the angels I think God sent down to get this whole show on the road, you know. But anyway, Joe is a great guy. And here is the list that I use. Making amends. The people I make amends to now, later, I may not, and never. Okay? The now was the people. Let's face it, for me, the people I hurt the most were the people that loved me the most. It was very, I'm going to use the word, expensive to love me. If you love me, I hurt you. Not so much intentionally, but you were a mark. I would borrow from you, steal from you, lie to you. And then I would apologize to you, and I would do it all over again. And the family was the people I needed to most. My parents, my mother, my father, my two daughters, even though they were very young when I first got sober, they got older while I was in the program. And I remember one time I was sober about 4 or 5 years, and my one daughter, she's about 10 or 11, and I'm, and she says, "Dad, I think you need to go to a meeting." I'm there, "What the hell?" They knew, you know. But anyway, later, we're like the guy knocked off the bar stool. He wasn't, you know, he was on the list, but it wasn't eminent. I may or I may not. One of the things, and this is a valid point, in all my resentments at least, when I first got the resentment, I felt like the victim. That's all I could focus on. What you did to me. Why you, SOB. That's why I do a fourth and fifth step to take a look at my part in it. If there is any, and almost always I have a part in it. And there was this one young girl that was a friend of my daughter's, stayed overnight when they were about 15. She stole $300 from me, and I had a resentment, and I held on to that. I couldn't see my part in it because it was six $50 bills that at the time I was going to get a, I think it was a heater core replaced on Monday, and I had them on my dresser in my bedroom with a bottle of cologne on top of them. And the kids were in the house, and my daughter and I went out to bring wood in. We left this little girl in the house. And it wasn't until I did a fourth and fifth step many years later. Most crime is crime of opportunity. And what I did was I set her up. I left a 15-year-old in my house by herself. And my bedroom door was open, and she saw the $300 and took it. And that was my part in it. I set her up, and I didn't mean to. Now, she still stole the money, so I haven't made amends to her yet, but I think I can now, because I got over the animosity of being the victim. And then I have two people on the never. And these were people, one was a teacher that made an example out of me and physically abused me. And I had a real deep resentment. And another one was a friend who betrayed me. And I thought about it. I was reading the Gospels, and I thought, I wonder what Jesus thought of Judas. You know, I don't know. He never really said much in the Gospels about it. But anyway, and I have forgiven them because I've quit hating them and plotting revenge. When I was drinking, I used to hunt them. And I know enough about barroom brawls that you couldn't beat somebody to death in a bar because they stop you. So I was going to shoot them about 3 times in the abdomen. Okay. Meryl says no. But I was really plotting revenge. This was a long time ago. I was drinking. And that's how deep the hatred went. Now, I've forgiven them because I quit thinking about revenge. And I no longer want to hurt them. And I had to do that to move on. Why don't I make amends? It's probably out of fear, because I do have a violent temper, and I manage it real well. Marilyn and I have been together about 30 years, and she's never seen it, because I manage it, but it's still there. And I'm afraid, face to face with them, if they kind of accepted it, okay, I'd be okay, but I can be triggered, and I don't want... Remember I said about Fred Sanford when he said to his son, "I wish I knew where I was going to die." And he said, and Lamont says, "Why is that, Pop? I'd never go there." Well, this is a place I don't know how I'd react, so I'm not going to go there. You know? And not only that, on the teacher, I can see some of the stuff. I had a part in it because I used to antagonize him. The friend, I can't see that I did anything to warrant what he did. And anyway, I'm not. They're on the never. I don't know if they'll move up or not. They haven't. It's been, oh geez, it's been 50 years with the teacher. And I hope he's not alive. No. But anyway, this is where I'm coming from with this. And the thing is, why do I make amends? It's what seals the deal. I'll talk more about that next week. But when I make amends, I not only am cleaning up wreckage from the past, but I always promise I'll try to never do that again to them or anyone else. Here's the procedure that I do when I'm becoming willing to make amends. If you allow me to use the word ready to make amends, and like I said, this is not just advice, but I see a difference between willing and ready. I was always ready, but... or always willing, but not always ready. Okay, number one, first I do a fourth step on whether it's a resentment, a harm to another, whether it's a sexual harm or just a harm, or a fear, if the fear involves another person. I'm deadly afraid of lightning above tree line, but there's not any need to make amends to lightning, you know. It's pretty honest. It'll zap you. I think if you get hit by lightning, it probably hurts really bad, but not for a real long time, you know. I mean, but anyway, if there's a fear and I have a part and there's a victim in it, I need to make amends. And what I have to do is the fourth step to see what my part in it was. For instance, the girl I was talking about, it took that fourth step and a fifth step to realize that I had a part in that. I do a fifth step with another person to refine my reality of the situation. Sometimes I do fifth steps with more than one person. And here again, this is the inventory to find out what I did wrong, what my part in it was. Because really, if you think about it, that's the only reason we make amends is for our part. You know, if the other person did something to me, I have to get over the animosity of feeling the victim and find my part in it. Now, I pray. I pray about it. And in my quiet time, and I listen to that small voice inside me, and that really helps. Now, I talk to a trusted person. Now, this is different than the fifth step that I just talked about. The issue here is whether an amends is appropriate or not. This is why this is not always who I did the fifth step with in this situation. It's not always my sponsor, but I need to talk over every time I make amends with a trusted person. And I don't want to, I want to talk to somebody that's unbiased. So, an example, if I talk to someone who's a victim or a perpetrator in a simpler situation, they will understandably have a preconceived bias of the situation. And if I'm going to make amends because I stole something, I don't want to ask a thief for, because he's going to downplay it and say, it's just what you did when you're drinking. Or if it's somebody that was a victim of somebody stealing stuff, they may go the other way. So I need to have somebody on the outside that can see my ear. Remember that? The spider in my ear? Somebody needs to be able to see that. I guess my point is to never make amends to anyone until I talk with someone outside the situation who can be objective. And it was just a couple weeks ago, I had a sponsee that stole kind of an insignificant amount of money off a very large corporation that he worked for. And they would never have missed it. But he felt bad about it. And he said, should I make amends? And I said, well, you need to do a step 8. You need to become ready. You need to write it out. But it says, except when to do so would harm, injure them or others. And I could see him doing a lot of harm if he went. For one, who would he pay it back to? Whoever he paid it back to, if he gave him cash, they'd probably put it in their pocket and say, go with God. I told him maybe take the money that he stole and donate it to the Y or something like that. And as a sponsor, I didn't want him going to jail for something he did that could have been interpreted. And I've heard of alcoholics. I don't know any. I've just heard of alcoholics that made amends, and it ended up like a confession, you know, and they ended up getting charged. Anyway, after I do all these things, I move on to step 9 if I believe it's still appropriate. after I've all taken all the precautions, I go through these steps before I do it. And this is not making amends. This is becoming entirely ready. Now, I'm going to go to questions in just a couple seconds, but the people closest to me, my parents, especially my parents, and people real close to me, I made amends to them 100 of times. I told them I was sorry, and they didn't believe it. And the thing is, it's hard to make, you know, my mother was, we lived in Cambridge Springs, a small town, and I've only been on TV once in my life, actually twice, at 6 and 11. And I was on TV being escorted into the magistrates by this really fine New York State policeman. I was in handcuffs, and I was going in there on some drug charges. And it was on the news. I don't know if she saw it at 6, but everybody else in Cambridge did. They called her, and she saw it again at 11. And she was too ashamed to go to church for the next 2 years. God, how do you make amends for that? Go up to her and say, "Gee, Ma, I'm sorry. Yeah, I screwed up." Well, I'll tell you how I became ready to make amends. Is one day I didn't take a drink or a drug, and I came to a meeting, and not much happened. But I did the same thing the next day, and again the next day. And after a couple weeks or two, my parents probably thought, "Wonder what's up with Buzz. He hasn't been here with his hand out borrowing money or anything." And I kept doing that. Got a job. I kept it. And at first, they were probably waiting for me to show up in a police blotter as usual, you know, because that's kind of the way I rolled. And it didn't happen. And he's kept his job for a while. You know, he quit stealing. Quit hearing about him fighting in the town tavern. That's what you're supposed to do in a town tavern, I thought, you know. It was... But anyway, and the thing is, after a while, damn, he's starting to pay back some of this money that we thought was gone forever, you know. And he's... kind of being responsible. He hasn't asked us for rent money and stuff like that. After I did that long enough, they took my amends seriously. And I'm going to talk about that next week in step 9. And right now, I guess I'm done and there's time for questions. Thank you.
Is there any questions?
She's kind of like Vanna White, isn't she?
What letter do you want?
Okay, I'll get it pretty soon. Are we ready? All right, we got one. We got to take her.
Joel, an alcoholic.
Hi, Joel.
I'm curious why you found yourself in so many fights in the tavern. Usually when I'm there, I'm happy.
I wasn't. There's probably one in every bar like me. I was not happy. Yeah. And that's why I did it sound like I was in a lot of fights?
Yeah, I guess kind of did.
I always had marks on my face. I didn't know why. Did that answer your question, Joel?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, Helen.
I can project without this.
No, we're going to get you on tape.
You're on tape.
I just heard a speaker over the weekend who had a couple people on under the never column, and his sponsor made him go make amends to the two people that were on his never call. What do you think about that?
I'm afraid to, personally. And it's because I don't know what would happen. And I have some sponsees that have been such victims. And, you know, there isn't always my part in all the... You know, Father Martin says, if you're walking down the street and somebody punches you in the nose, you're soft between the ears if you don't get a resentment. If somebody comes up and sticks a gun in your face and takes your money, what part of that do you have in that? You know? And I really think there's times... I don't think we need to make amends to everybody we resent. And that kind of goes against... And it's all my own issues. Like these two gentlemen I'm talking about, if it went bad, I could get killed, or I could end up in jail. And I don't want to do that at this stage in life. So the sponsor I have right now is not big enough to make me do that. And I have some pretty tough sponsees. I'm not going to try to make them do that, you know. I got some pretty tough sponsees right in this room. But that's my own. And probably, you know, like I said, I'm not perfect at this. I'm no expert. But right now, those two guys are going to stay on my never list for a while. Maybe that'll change. Who knows? Who knows? Because I'm open to it. I had a hard time not hating them. Okay, I had a lot of animosity. And I really don't now, but I don't want them to wake it up. You know, one of the things, that problem has been removed, but it's like my alcoholism. I haven't drank in so long that I look much like a normal person. I live much like a person that's not an alcoholic. But, you know, a transvestite is much like a woman, but they ain't. And it's the same thing. I'm still an alcoholic. I just don't want to wake that part of me up. You know, I could wake up my alcoholism. I could go do that with a draft probably within a few minutes or right here. There's probably booze around real close. Does that make sense? I just don't want to wake that part of me up, so I'm going to leave it alone. You know, I don't go out of my way to find them. Other questions?
No, it's that one further along. Hold the mic until I get back.
So I'll talk slow. Buzz, thanks again for coming out. I really appreciate it, and you sharing your program with us. We were talking about step 8 here, and you were... I had two questions. The first one is, when you do someone's fifth step with them, do you take notes on a fifth step for amends that they may or may not come up with in their eighth step?
Do I, as a sponsor?
Yes, as a sponsor.
No, I let them do that.
You let them do it?
Yeah, unless... I can't say that. If I think they're avoiding the issue, I bring it up.
That's what I mean.
I'm pretty direct with my sponsees. I tell them I can look them in the eye and tell them I've never lied to them. And if I think they're skirting the issue or avoiding it, I address it with them. One of the things I do is I never tell my sponsees what to do. I try not to. One of my grosser handicaps is being controlling, and every once in a while I want to go, you know, lay the law down.
Right. So you don't think sometimes that that's really necessary?
Maybe so. Now that I'm rethinking that, yeah. It's probably, because if I think they're avoiding something or skirting it, it has to be addressed. Now, I wouldn't do like Helen said. I wouldn't force my sponsee to make amends. But I think one of the things I usually do in this step is have them write out the amends, and that's becoming ready to make amends. It's not making the direct amends, just putting it on paper.
Right.
And I kind of address that more next week because I write out my amends before I make them.
Right, so you have them write out their amends, so it's like a practice thing before they actually go do that.
Yeah. And I do it myself because I think I learned this from being in court. When somebody whips out a piece of paper, everybody pays attention. And I think that shows that you've put thought in it when you go and you open up a piece of paper and you say, listen, I need to make amends to you. And I don't want to go too far into that with this question because that's really step nine stuff, and I'm going to talk about that next week. Yet another question.
Yeah, and the other thing is I was always told that, you know, when I was doing the eight step, part of my list was not only the amends that I had to make, but what was my character defect in it, and then I had to replace the defect with the virtue. That was a part of my eight step and the way I was told to do it.
Usually what I try to do is, personally, I try to list the character defect on the paper when I'm making amends. I plan on bringing an actual amends that I made to my father after he died, and sharing it with the group. I'm okay with that. And I think that's what seals the deal. It makes me focus on what I did wrong and why I'm making amends. Because I don't make amends because of something you did wrong. I make amends for my part in it, what I did wrong. I just disregard. One of the things I always hated when somebody was apologizing, they say, geez, Buzz, I'm awful sorry. The next two words are, but you. And, boy.
Yeah.
Eh? Okay. No, that's never happened to anybody else, has it? No. Nobody's ever said that. I'm sorry, but you. Anybody else? Joey.
Hey Buzz, thanks for your presentation. So, for those of us who balk at even the thought of making a list, in your own words, what value in doing this? I know that you make amends on a daily basis. I've had that experience, and I'm grateful for that. But early on, what value? What context, in your own words, would this be?
Okay. Actually, it's twofold. One, it cleans up the wreckage of the past, and you will feel better when you make amends. Okay? And I know in a big book, and I've heard a lot of experts say, sometimes people don't accept amends and throw you out of their office or something. You'll still feel better because you attempted to right a wrong. And the second thing is, I believe all the steps are more about the future. This is a design for living. In the past, we already lived that. No matter how much you did right or wrong, that's done. And we're looking at the future. And when I make amends, it's like signing a contract with myself. And the more I four-step and fifth-step things and take a look at myself and make amends, the less times I create the opportunity where I have to make amends. Does that make sense? I mean, I do less today. I don't think I steal. I don't even give people the finger very often, you know. I mean, well, once in a while, you know. It's progress, right? Does that answer your question, Joe? Yeah, it's more about the future than... I think all the steps are about the future. We want to grow along spiritual lines.
We're out of time.
Thank you, folks.